Ladies and gentlemen, storytellers of all ages, lend your ears to co-hosts Brad and Philip as we delve into the Marketing Your Attraction podcast.
Welcome to Marketing Your Attraction, episode 9. I'm Brad, and I'm with Philip. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We have a lot of great news topics to cover, and we have a great main topic as well. Philip, how are you doing this week?
I'm wonderful. How are you, Brad?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. There's so much, you know, marketing news. There's so many seasonal attractions and regional theme parks opening all around the world. This is always where the kind of the industry awakens from its winter and early spring slumber. And, you know, from now until, I guess, the end of the year, it's going to just get more and more exciting and more news.
Yeah. And then, you know, we all have projects going on and all of our stuff is picking up. So it's getting crazy.
Yeah. I think just this week I've talked about, you know, primarily summer, but already talking about fall and even had one meeting about Christmas.
Nice.
That's the fun, crazy part, working in the attraction industry. But enough about us. Let's dive into the news because we have a lot of news topics to cover this week. Where did you want to start?
We have a lot of things to cover. I'm going to just drop a few little info here. So the first one I want to bring up is from Egypt Today. And basically, I just kind of want to kind of paint a picture for everyone that, you know, it's not just the US, but Google rules the entire world. So here's a report here. The report has shown that digital giants Google and Facebook have both dominated the advertising market. Google alone takes an average of 90% of UK search advertising, making at least, I think that's like 5 billion on this in the UK, like 5 billion pounds. This actually came from an article saying that like these online advertisers are a threat to like the news industry. So like, it's kind of like, it's not just a US thing. Like it's also like all over the world. Like people are like, hey, you know, these online advertisers are taking money that used to go into journalism and to like print media. And like, it's causing this all to explode because print media is a much larger thing in the UK. You know, they really enjoy magazines and classic covers a lot more. So second thing, but Facebook also rules the world. So here's, if anyone was expecting like a fallout from the whole data breach, that didn't happen. So Facebook just posted that 11.8 billion in advertising revenue for Q1 of 2018, which is a 50% increase over the same period last year, which is a little mind-boggling. I was trying to figure out a way to explain it. And earlier I was like, that's basically like they brought in enough revenue to pay for like 10 Star Wars lands, basically, like just in Q1. The number of daily active users on the platform increased 13% for 1.45 billion in March, which is high. I mean, 1.45 billion is you know, kind of like record high.
That's daily active users. That's just such a staggering number.
Wow. Yeah, like daily active users. And, you know, it's like basically despite the whole data breach that hasn't really, like despite the trust crisis and the data breach, it's sort of like it's not really affecting Facebook. We could argue why is in like, you know, it might be hurting us as advertisers, but it's not hurting Facebook because like, it's like friends are posting stuff for friends. So it's kind of like, they're kind of like divorced from the situation. But, and it looks like it's just going to, with the changes they've made to the newsfeed, it's really just going to like make this even more successful. So those are some quick hits. Brad, you have something from Amazon.
Yeah. So as we've talked about, you know, in this episode a little bit and a lot in previous episodes, Facebook and Google collectively own around 80% or so of online advertising. But luckily, I guess in some ways, depending on whether you trust or like Amazon, the nice thing is Amazon's becoming a bigger and bigger player in the advertising business. They just reported that their advertising business is now a $2 billion ad business and is becoming a significant part of their profit margins for Amazon. I've experimented a little bit with Amazon advertising. For the most part, it's tailored to products and companies that are already selling through Amazon. So for most of us in the attractions industry, it doesn't make sense right now. You can advertise on Amazon if you are not selling a product on there, but the minimum ad buys are usually between $30,000 to $50,000 just to have a conversation with them and get your ads on that platform. But as they continue to grow, and in this article, this was from CNBC.com, was talking about how important this advertising business is going to become to Amazon because it helps them subsidize their lesser margin businesses, like their retail business and their grocery business. So they're looking at other areas of their businesses where they can be much more profitable. And Amazon advertising is definitely one of those. So as they become bigger and bigger, they're projected to be the third largest advertiser behind Google and Facebook in just a couple of years. I would imagine that they'll be introducing a self-service platform. So just like how Google has Google AdWords and Facebook has Ads Manager, allowing small businesses and all sorts of attractions and other industries and companies to be able to easily advertise on their platforms. I believe Amazon will be the next one that we need to pay attention to. They have so much data. Think about all of the data and all the different targeting metrics that Amazon could open up to advertisers if they wanted to. So something interesting there. I'm always happy when there's more competition in the ad business. And as I mentioned before, when you just have Google and Facebook competing with one another, that becomes a duopoly, as we call it in the industry. And so the Amazon's going to get serious about this. Can only be a good thing for all of us in the attractions industry and all of us marketers in general.
It'll be very interesting to see how that develops and how it specifically can develop for attractions. You know, I'm not sure if this looks like something where in the future, you know, we're pushing like digital tickets or different types of products kind of like through Amazon type of thing.
Yeah, and Amazon's experimented with selling tickets and almost being a competitor to Ticketmaster in some ways. Mm-hmm. They pulled back from that, I think, just last year. They had a pretty decent-sized business in the UK, matter of fact, but they haven't increased that, and I believe they actually ended their UK experiment. But I'm pretty sure Amazon will not stop until they own every aspect of the world. Yeah. I would not be surprised if they introduce another online ticketing product sometime in the future, but I haven't heard any news about that.
They'll just launch like Amazon experiences, and then they'll just like build like places that like you can only get like tickets to if you like buy them through Amazon.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, remember just what was it, 10 or 15 years ago, all Amazon did was sell books.
Yeah.
And now look at where they're at, so that they can basically do anything and everything they want and get into any industry they want to. What else is happening in news? I know you had an interesting story, I think, about Thinkwell Media or Thinkwell Group.
Yes. So this is very interesting. I wanted to just put it out here. Thinkwell Group, which is a big force in the industry. They had this press release that came out. Thinkwell Group, a global experience design and production agency specializing in the creation of theme parks, major attractions, live events, and museum exhibits around the world, is pleased to announce the addition of Thinkwell Media, a full-service media and creative production team, to the company. Thinkwell Media brings expertise in visual storytelling and cutting-edge media experiences to further enhance and expand Thinkwell's capabilities in media editing and production. Thinkwell Media works closely with major Hollywood studios to produce original and behind-the-scenes marketing content for a variety of movies and television shows, including Ferdinand, Despicable Me 3, The Dark Tower, Shameless, Vikings, and more. The team has also developed and produced commercials and celebrity-driven campaign content for international service clients and video gaming brands such as Blizzard. Since joining Thinkwell, the new media team has been involved in custom media production for local base entertainment and brand experience projects, including the NFL experience in Times Square. What is your take on this, Brad?
I think it's interesting. It's a natural evolution of where designers are going, because as more and more of their work becomes fully integrating with the client, they're not just doing a piece of the project, especially for a company like Thinkwell, who has designed like the Warner Brothers movie studio tour in Burbank, which is an excellent tour. They've done all sorts of different attractions, and also have worked with different companies to create brand experience centers over the years. I think it makes a lot of sense that they would now move into becoming a full service, you know, media creative production team, just to be able to get additional work that may have been going to other clients, or that, you know, to be able to get additional work that may have been going to other companies and be able to capture more of that work. They're able to become more full service. And yeah, I'm interested if we're going to see more, you know, more companies in the theme park industry, more design companies kind of expand what they're able to offer. Because I could eventually see Thinkwell Media, you know, even offering, you know, advertising solutions and, you know, with their expertise and creative expertise, media production, there's a lot of different services they could offer if they wanted to.
Yeah. So that's what I didn't quite get here, because obviously, like, this is a marketing podcast and when we think about media, we're like, oh, so this is like a creative agency or like an ad firm. And it seems like, if I understand it correctly, like they're really just now producing like video content, basically, like to sell to other people. Is that what's happening?
I think so. And, you know, from my previous job working in the animation industry, there are so many little companies that specialize in very, very niche parts of the entertainment industry. I mean, there's dozens of companies that all they do is create trailers for movies and TV shows. That's all they do, are these trailer houses. And so I think what Thinkwell is trying to do is get a little bit of that business, whether it's the behind the scenes business, whether it's, you know, creating video content, promotional content for both the projects that they're working on, but also their clients who are already in, you know, the movie business, in the TV business, who are, they're already actively working with, being able to work with them on a more regular basis. I would imagine that's part of the strategy. As the, you know, the tough thing with a company like Thinkwell Media, who, or Thinkwell Group, you know, who's doing experience design and production, those are really big projects and they don't happen all the time. I wonder if part of their strategy is trying to become this full service media and creative production team to keep those relationships with the companies they're already working with on a more ongoing basis. I don't know anyone over there. I don't have any idea what their secret strategy might be. But when I read the press release, that was the first thing that I thought about was, oh, this is a really genius way to continue working with a company like Warner Brothers or
interesting.
You know, one of their other clients, one of the other many clients they work with on a regular basis, instead of, oh, hey, you know, we're doing we're designing an attraction for you every, you know, 3 to 5 years or whatever it might be. And then that kind of keeps those client relationships a little cold if you're only working with them every, you know, every so often. Whereas a media and creative production agency is able to have an ongoing relationship with clients.
That's a very interesting take. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Interesting. But there's no strategic portion to this. I guess that's what I was originally like, huh? Like, it's not like they're coming and they're putting strategy behind the creation of something. So like, you know, if you would go to like a creative firm to for help putting together a campaign, you know, and then they're like, you know, you're working with them for their kind of their strategic expertise, you know, like, how should this look? Why should this look this way? You know, whatever. I don't sense that that's really in here. It sort of seems like it's really just, yeah, like creating kind of like B-roll.
Right. This might be a first step too. They might be kind of testing the waters, because trying to be a full service agency instead of just a piece of a full service agency.
Yeah.
That, you know, the ad and marketing business is weird, because you have a lot of, there's like the fine line between being a partner with other agencies and being a competitor. So they might be looking at being a creative production house first, and then you know, just kind of creating that media with input from other agencies or from internal folks.
Yeah.
And eventually it might become more of that strategic agency. But like I said, I'm just spitballing here. I have no inside sources over there.
It's very interesting. It just is. Anyway, I mean, the last thing is, it's interesting because that also conflicts with like the press release. So on their homepage, they say, on the outside, we're a full service creative production agency that specializes in visual storytelling and cutting edge immersive media experiences. But that contrasts really the press release, because I did not get that sense from the press release. or at least I think this might be this weird kind of thing where what we think of in the marketing world as a full service creative production agency might be different from what these guys coming from like just the attraction space think a full service creative production agency is. anyway,
that's very true. It'll be interesting to see where, you know, where it develops. And it's good that they're broadening, what they're able to serve, and they're broadening their offerings too, because it's, you know, it's a tough industry. And although right now the industry is really hot and there's a lot of work all over the world, as we know, these are always, these things move in cycles. So unfortunately, probably in a few years, 10 years, whatever, whenever it happens, you're going to see the industry have another downturn. And it makes sense that they're trying to, expand what they're able to offer and expand the relationships with their already existing clients. So anyway, I think you had a story about Thorpe Park.
Yes.
Over in the UK.
So there's two other kind of like campaign examples I wanted to bring up very briefly. One is from Thorpe Park over in the UK, and I'm just going to summarize it very quickly. So basically what's happening is apparently, UK parks close earlier than US parks do. So Thorpe Park is experimenting with being open later under like a separate ticket, which is similar to what some of our US parks have been doing, where there's like a separate ticket for like nighttime hours that are like quote unquote outside of normal park operating hours. So, but what was very, that alone is interesting, but what's very interesting about this campaign to me that I wanted to bring up here is, so they had the Walking Dead experience over there, and they say in here that the Walking Dead ride will be open to annual pass and local pass holders between 6 p.m. and 10 p.m., where challengers will have to dodge the hordes of zombies in darkness and sunsets, blah, blah. The Walking Dead experience will only be available for those who have paid for an annual pass. That is very interesting to me. So basically there's like, now they're like, hey, we're going to be open later under these separate ticket options, but we're going to, kind of enforce this like class structure, into the park where like, only if you're pass holders can you get like exclusive access to these rides. So it's very interesting because I haven't seen that done too much where it's like, there's a separate ticket nighttime hour event, but then inside of that also that already exclusive event, there's like this additional benefit that's only for pass holders. So
yeah, no, it's an interesting way to continue to show value to your season pass holders. I've never seen anything like you mentioned, where they're really separating based on an experience level of like you can only do this awesome experience if you have a season pass. Usually it's more like, hey, if you have a season pass, then you get in early, or maybe you get like a special night party, get a special lanyard, whatever it is, but. Yeah, it's true. It's interesting to see them experiment with offering different attractions depending on whether you have a day ticket or a season pass.
Yeah, that's interesting. The next very quick one is from it's apparently axe throwing is a thing. It's like a pretty popular thing, and there's an escape room that opened up a new escape room. Or like a new escape section of their escape room or whatever that allows people to throw axes. So kind of just like at a bar where you're throwing darts, but you're throwing axes in like an annex of an escape room. And the interesting thing to me, I mean, axe throwing is interesting in and of itself, but this thing here is Escape 605 will set up axe throwing leagues for people to compete in throughout the league. So that was interesting to me where it's like, they're bringing in this outside sport activity, and then they're trying to kind of like gamify it or kind of set this elements of pride into it by saying we're going to create this league. So just an interesting thing. I'm not sure if it's going to go anywhere, and I'm not sure, I think it will really come down to the execution of this. Can an escape room launch an axe throwing league? should an escape room be focusing on launching an axe throwing league? These are separate questions, but it's just an interesting thing.
So. Yeah, no, it's interesting to see them, you know, borrow an idea from that, you know, from bowling. I mean, bowling leagues have been a huge part of the bowling industry for years and years and years. It's a great way to include that competitiveness, that group mentality, that group engagement, and also have that repeatability, group repeatability into your attraction. The other interesting thing, this reminds me just of how much, you know, esports, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, people were just thinking, oh, well, a league where people play video games, is that going to work? And now that's finally starting to take off. So who knows, maybe axe throwing will be the next thing that will be televised on ESPN. Oh, I would not bet against it. You never know.
Yeah. Well, okay. So moving into our main topic, which I'm going to call frame for meaning. Okay. So this is going to be a wild one. So everyone kind of bear with me for a second. So the essence of what I'd like to get across here, this main topic I'd like to discuss with Brad. And this is like real-time discussion because I only briefed him partially on this at a time. So the main topic is understanding that when we are creating campaigns, when we're doing anything with our idea, you know, we're putting frames around it, and these frames, in order to get it to resonate, whatever word you want to put on it, you know, basically we're trying to get the attention of our target markets. Okay. So in order to get things, our target markets to understand and be invested in ideas, and in our products and what we're trying to get them to do, we have to put interesting frames around them. We've kind of talked about this in various different ways, but I want to highlight a few things. I'm going to take things from two separate books here. But my main argument is that when you are framing things, don't forget to frame them not just in the basal instincts like we usually frame them, like, oh, this we have this ticket deal, so you should, you know, come now because it's cheaper, because you want to save money, because, you know, you need money for, like, you know, what, like, you know, these basal frames we're working on. But don't forget to also consider the larger frames that you could invoke, and that people in your target market are potentially trying to achieve in their lives as a whole, right? These are generally more impactful frames, because the higher the frame is on Maslow's hierarchy, you know, the more someone will be interested in sharing the idea and sharing the frame. So I'm going to pull two kind of examples here. First is a few passages from Man's Search for Meaning. And if you haven't read Man's Search for Meaning, it's not a marketing book, obviously. Well, maybe not obviously, but it's not a marketing book. And I recommend everyone to read it, but it's not a marketing book. And I want to bring in just a few lines from it. But Man's Search for Meaning is a 1946 book by Viktor Frankl, chronicling his experiences as an Auschwitz concentration camp inmate during World War II, and describing his psychotherapeutic method, which involved identifying a purpose in life to feel positively about, and then immersively imagining that outcome. So when I read that, or kind of when I think about that, I think about that in marketing terms. I'm like, well, that's really kind of what we're trying to do as marketers, right? We're trying to figure out what purposes our target markets are trying to achieve, and that makes them feel positive about themselves. And then we're trying to put these frames around our stuff so that people can see how our stuff aligns with that, right? So a few lines from here that were very interesting to me. Self-actualization comes from getting farther away from the self, from committing to meaning. And you don't find meaning in life. Life challenges you to find it. And tension is necessary. And tension comes from going towards the meaning, like striving for the meaning. So these are all kind of lines that tie to the point that, you know, people are happiest when they are trying to, they're striving for this meaning that they've committed to finding. So it's sort of like that to me ties into the marketing component, because that's really what, you know, when you know your target market, you should understand what they're trying to achieve, i.e. like their meaning and their commitment to these things they're trying to achieve. And you should understand what role you're playing in the larger context of them, and whether or not you can frame something around that. I'm going to pair this with a separate book, Made to Stick by Chip and Dan Heath, which is, which is a marketing book, and it is a book that I highly recommend as well. And there is, in the book, they say that basically ideas are remembered. They give us like a 6-point framework for how ideas and are remembered. And it's like an acronym. The acronym is SUCCESS. And they're not guaranteeing that if idea has all these things, it'll be remembered, but it's kind of like, these are like the top qualities in ideas that they've found. So the acronym stands for, it's SUCCESS, and it stands for simplicity, unexpected, concreteness, credibility, emotions, and stories. This would make several episodes, probably like each piece would make a separate episode for our podcast. So we're not going to go into all of that, but I want to tie what we talked about with the meaning and framing to the fifth element, which is emotions. We've heard this a lot, right? As marketers, where we're like, you have to tie into someone's emotions, you know, what is the why behind your product and all blah, 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 blah. But I really like some of the ways that they talk about emotions here. You know, so basically you're telling the person a story, not the stats or the large area. And they caution here to not overlook self-interest, as in like what's in it for you. They recommend thinking about how you can tap a profound motivation. And what they say about this specifically is like that everyone thinks that other people are at the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy. So like when we as marketers are like designing campaigns, we think that we ourselves are like higher up on this hierarchy where we're like, you know, where we're trying to find self-actualization, but we think that the people we're targeting are just trying to get like food and sex, you know? So like, he's like, don't fall into that trap because everyone thinks everyone else is looking for other things, but actually everyone is really, trying to become self-actualized, you know, and it's not always, that apparent. So that specific line is what ties in exactly to man's search for meaning, which is this idea of, self-actualization coming from you committing to a meaning and to finding this thing in life and allowing it challenge you to get towards that meaning. So now we come back to my original point, which is how this ties into marketing. It ties into understanding these and then being able to frame that in a simplistic way to our target market. And one example I'm going to use from the Made to Stick book is, they're in there and they're saying, so for example, you know, your target market are these math students and you're trying to get them to want to, you know, study math and actually learn math. So how do you do that? You know, it's like one of the biggest challenges ever, right? Is like, you know, if you can figure out how to get students excited about math, then you could sell anything, right? So the example they use is, you know, they had all these different examples of, you could tell them it's important because they have to get into college. You could tell them it's important because, you know, math is required for higher level thinking, blah, blah, and all these things. Or you could tell them that math is mental weight training, that you're never actually going to use anything you learn in math class. But you're also never going to be in a situation where your life depends on whether or not you can lift a dumbbell off yourself or lift like a barbell that hits you. You know, like it's not like you're going to get like someone's going to throw a barbell at you while you're walking down the street. And then you're going to like, your life's going to depend on whether or not you can catch it and take it off of you. Like it's the same type of thing. You know, math is mental weight training, that math is building your brain up, your brain's muscles up so that you are able to do things in do other tasks that require those base level muscles. Okay, so roundabout thing. So essentially that's a good way of framing this concept in a higher, a profound motivation or profound meaning, which ties to man's search for meaning as well as this emotions here. Okay, there, I'm done. So Brad, what do you think?
I always love that you bring so much more thought to these concepts than anybody else that I know. Like you really think about, okay, how do I frame these? Where do I take it from an academic standpoint as well?
So framing. So what do you think about like frames and like profound motivations for our audiences? I mean, 'cause for me, this was sort of like a wake-up call. It kind of happened in like two phases. I had read Man's Search for Meaning separately, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know. And some of these lines really resonate with me because I was like, oh, you know, I really should be figuring out my own life, like what meaning is and trying to find it in life. And like, I have this big old like existential crisis. And then I like flip over to Made to Stick and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, I was this person. I was doing this, you know, I was saying, like, even when we're like, we just made like a rep training video, you know, for our reps for this new cabling system. And I was like, why should you care about this? Well, because, you know, you could make more money if you sold these cables because, you know, they can be sold custom orders and, you know, it makes everything easier. So I'm, you know, I like kind of caught myself. This was like a trip over insight moment where I was like, oh, I just like read this book where it was like, oh, self-actualization and meaning. And I'm thinking about it. But then this other book is like, hey, you know, everyone is trying to do this and you think it's just you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. I even was just designing like, you know, copy for these, our reps, you know, and I'm already just telling them, you know, oh, you just make more money. Ah, you know, that's all you care about is money, right? So this could make you more money. So money's good. Yeah, do it. Money. You know, basically I like fell into this trap myself.
Right. Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to look at framing, but I always think about it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I always think about framing as, what are you looking at it as, a gain or a loss? And when you're, especially when you're managing people or when you're selling a product or whatever, really trying to understand how are they framing it up? What are they looking at it from the same perspective that you are? Are they motivated? Do they have the same emotions as you do? And I look at it a lot from, I mean, I know we're a marketing podcast, but I think about framing a lot from the management perspective as well, as trying to understand what motivates different employees that I work with, different coworkers, you know, peers, the leadership teams that I work with is really important too. Because it's, you know, like you said, it's not always just the money. A lot of it is the personal recognition, the self-actualization. You really have to understand where are people coming from when you're talking about it, both whether it's your guests or your customers or your employees, coworkers, but trying to frame things for people in different ways is important. It's like you said, if you just think everyone is like you or that everyone is not like you, you're probably wrong. in both ways of that. Is that kind of what you were getting at with that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, I think that the takeaway for you guys as the audience is really, you know, we've said it a few times, but really, you know, try and if you don't already know, but kind of like suss out the profound motivation behind what's kind of driving some of your audiences, and understand that, you know, like everyone is, you know, generally speaking, like, you know, they are, you are like striving for self-actualization, you know, people are. So there is generally like a profound motivation and things that they're striving for. And, do you, and what you're doing, like, do you tie into that or do you not? And if you don't, is there potential for you to frame it away? You know, is that does correspond to that? You know, and, they're like, you know, cheesy examples, but I like the math is mental weight training one, you know. For me, you know, I always liked, you know, like when I was volunteering for Give Kids the World, kind of in Orlando, I always like, you know, that concept because, you know, the frames they were giving me was like, you know, we're the asset that we are giving people is memories for when their child passes away. And that's what we're doing here. Like, that's actually what we're doing. So like everything that you were doing is really to try and make this memory more important for this family. So everything you should be doing should just be, how can I make this family's experience? How can I make them remember it more and remember it well, so that when their child passes, they have something of them left over. And you're like, that's to me, like, you know, that's so much different than like, you're just going to volunteer at a place.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know?
Yeah. And it really, you know, it ties into, to like, you know, when I interviewed, there are two people that this is, two other examples I'll try and bring in here, in terms of frames, like, you know, the Arboretum, you know, when I did their article on their Illumination event, you know, they're like, what we're really striving for is to get people to see trees in a different light and make them understand, you know, that trees are still alive during the winter. And, you know, so, cause you know, they're like, well, you know, people come here for all these different reasons and some care about like conservation and blah, blah, this and that, whatever. You know, so they're all making frames that are derivative of that and trying to like align it up to their different segments and which one would like resonate with them to get to that profound motivation, that motivation of like discovering trees and what nature is doing during the winter. And then I separately had interviewed last week, John Featherstone, who's one of the co-founders of Lightswitch. It's a very large design firm in the themed entertainment space. And he was talking to me about, he spent like 12 years when he was young. So like as a teenager, like touring on the professional music circuit, and he worked with the Smiths and Janet Jackson and whatnot. And he was talking to me about like how kind of his job as a designer is to, take this, like this profound, basically he's like, look, I'm like super paraphrasing. I mean, I'm sure he would be okay with this paraphrasing, cause I'm not getting anything wrong, but I'm super paraphrasing. I'm trying to turn it into like market speak basically, but he's like, look, all of the people that come to these shows are part of a community. And my job as a designer is to make them immediately understand that the shared, motivations and purposes of the communities are all here so that they feel welcome when they come. And my job is to take this top shared struggle and this motivation and what the artist stands for and take that and strip it down to its very core essence and then to broadcast that essence out and make it immediately apparent that that this is the place where you need to be if you believe in this thing. And I was like, wow, that's, you know, that's a pretty hardcore like kind of marketing there. That's really, you know, in this thing is like that, you know, figuring out that hook to tie it in. So anyway, those are my examples. I'm done now.
Yeah, no, it gets really deep. And I think sometimes, you know, as marketers or even just as human beings, you want to look at, it's easy to look at, oh, well, people are going to your attraction to have fun. But it's like, you have to get a little bit deeper than that. And, I know when I've discussed framing and I always use the word motivation, like it's not exactly the same thing, but you know, when you start talking about that, it becomes deeper and sometimes it's not necessarily uncomfortable conversations, but when you start really thinking about yourself and how you're, and how your colleagues and your guests are truly motivated, you get into those more of the psychology of that, it's much harder to think that way. But I think the benefits can be very, the benefits can be very profound, and it can really help you have that one-on-one conversation at a deeper level, whether like you mentioned with your clients or really kind of understanding your customers more. But it's a tough thing, you know, it's not a top 10 list. It's not a, Facebook best practice or anything. So I don't feel like I hear a lot of discussion about that, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great summary of it. You know, I do think it's important for us to get to that. And you're right. The number of times I've heard someone where I'm like, why do people actually come to your insert sub attraction. Why do people come to your paintball field, haunted house, a family entertainment center, zoo, aquarium, theme park? I always get the answer of, well, I don't know. It's fun. Like it's everyone's like, it's easy because it's fun. And I'm like, well, there's probably more to it. You know, there's probably groups that come for all these different reasons. And like, do you have a frame around your thing that matches up to their motivation or not? You know, are you really tapping into that? Or are you just coming at it from like, our stuff should be fun, you know? So anyway, well, I think, So what are you up to? Where are you heading? What are you up to, Brad, this week?
Like I said, we're getting ready for summer, talking Scary Farm, talking Merry Farm, and not too much has changed since last week. So right now it's just right before our summer season kicks off. What have you been up to, Philip?
Oh, just a lot of traveling around. This coming week, heading back into LA, and then I'm driving up to the Connect Line open house and visiting some of our reps, and then a few work days, and then heading off to Chicago to prepare for Light Fair, which will be next week, so like a week from when this episode airs. So it's going to be busy month. Well,
yeah.
I think that's all for us. Remember, if you'd like to subscribe to our weekly emails, you'll get the expanded version of the notes and occasionally special treats like PowerPoint presentations that I've made. So you can go to www.marketingyourattraction.com, marketingyourattraction.com to subscribe. You can also subscribe to this podcast via basically any podcast player in existence by just searching for Marketing Your Attraction. And it would, if you're feeling so inclined, it would help us if you would give us a review on iTunes. iTunes is still one of the best kind of podcast syndicators. So it really would help. Of course, a review anywhere you're listening to this, a review would be great, or feedback to us would be great, but iTunes would be especially helpful, or just jump on our email list.